And so we start another brand new week here on Political Rewind. It's Monday, March 29th, 2021. I'm glad to have everybody with us for the show today. I'm Bill Nygut. Big week in Georgia politics. The legislature meets today for day 39 of their session. Tomorrow they'll take a break from the actual session to work out issues that they want to resolve in terms of some of the bills that are still pending. And then they have day 40, the final day of the session, on Wednesday when they have sine die. So we expect a couple of long days down at the Capitol, and there are still some very consequential bills that remain to be resolved, and we'll talk about some of them on the show today. But the headlines that continue to play here in Georgia and in Washington have to do with the quick signature by the governor after surprise passage before people expected it to happen of the election bill, which has numerous provisions that Republicans insist have to do with voter security, building confidence in elections here, and which, of course, Democrats and other voting rights activists say are efforts at voter suppression. There was a protest down at Atlanta City Hall over the weekend, and in Washington, members of Congress appeared on some of the Sunday talk shows to say that they are going to push, Democrats pushing hard to get the Senate to take up a sweeping federal voting reform bill that will add protections to some of the measures that states like Georgia have been looking at. So we'll talk about all that as well. And then I want to spend a couple minutes talking about the Park Cannon arrest on Thursday. Still some conversation about why she was arrested after knocking on the governor's door, trying to get in to the ceremony. The optics of it, if nothing else, were pretty awful. An African-American state representative led off in handcuffs by two white Georgia State Patrol officers. We'll talk about that and a lot more. Great panel to do it, too. Jim Galloway is with us, former political columnist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Glad to have you with us today, Jim.
Happy to be here. It has been an exciting weekend, hasn't it?
Yeah. Lots of stuff going on this weekend in politics and elsewhere. Mayor Dena Holliday Ingram, the mayor of East Point, is back with us today. Mayor, how are things in East Point this morning?
Things are great, Bill. Thank you so much for the opportunity to join you guys this morning and be a part of Political Rewind again. But things are good. There's still no point like East Point.
Hey, Mayor, real quick. Obviously, you're part of Fulton County, so you have numbers based on the county turnout. But what do you know about how people are doing with vaccinations in the city of East Point? How are your people in East Point doing in terms of getting vaccinated?
So I can tell you that our people in East Point really want the vaccination. We've offered a vaccination in partnership with GenCare in last month. And we also are now having vaccinations at Impact Church, a local church in our city, on Thursdays. And so we have that locally. But Georgia International Convention Center is right next door, where folks can go in College Park, as well as the Delta Air Museum in Hayteville. So I know that there has been a lot of interest and a lot of people actually responding and getting vaccinated. The vaccine hesitancy, I think, is still there, but not as much as people anticipated. And so we've seen a really good response, and as well as continuing to share information about, you know, the Mercedes-Benz Stadium and other places. So people are getting appointments, and now that it's open to every Georgian 16 and over, right, I think we are primed to be able to have ample opportunities for them to be vaccinated.
You make an interesting point. There was early on a lot of concern that African Americans particularly would be reluctant to be vaccinated given past medical horrors that are still fresh in many people's minds. But the national polling shows that, in fact, that's turned around entirely. And in fact, African Americans want the vaccine at the same basic rate as white people out there do. So you make a good point about the fact the hesitancy doesn't exist the way it might have early on, Dena.
Yes, and it's really been an access issue, right? Like making sure that there are opportunities for vaccination in communities of color. I know given the data in Fulton County, and advocacy by mayors. The Fulton County Health Equity Initiative was initiated where mayors can refer people who might not be able to get online, right, and don't have access to technology, but to ensure access to all residents. And so we're making those referrals. We tell people call our office, and then we can refer them directly, and they'll get the phone call. So I think there's been a lot of good movement around equity, around access, and the hesitancy is low.
Yeah, good. Brian Robinson is with us as well. He, of course, is a longtime Republican political consultant, former communications director for the former governor of Georgia, and now runs his own firm, Robinson Republic, founder and president of that firm. Brian, welcome back to Political Rewind. It's been a few weeks. You said to me a couple of weeks ago, man, things are getting busy in my life. I'd better beg off for a while, but we're so glad to have you back.
No, thank you for keeping me on the radar. Yeah, you know, this time of year was so much popping. And what I do for a living, of course, is writing, which you can't just, you know, do on a dime. So I always plan for it. But also, I want to say happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you, Brian Robinson. I appreciate that. It's true. I did have a birthday, a very quiet birthday yesterday, but thanks for mentioning that. Renee Alegria is back with us, too, president and CEO of Mundo Hispanico Digital. Renee, thank you for joining us. How are things for you?
Thanks for having me, Bill. Things are good. Things are, you know, the sun is shining today. The tornadoes seem to have moved on and passed us. So looking like not as dramatic a week for Georgia as last week, at least weather-wise.
Renee, let me, as long as the ball's in your court, we know that the Hispanic community, like the African-American community, those are two communities where there's been some concern about whether there's going to be access to the vaccine, as there has been in other communities. What's happening with vaccinations in the Hispanic community? Are there plenty of opportunities for people to get vaccinated?
Well, the opportunities are the same as they are for all of the other communities throughout Georgia. But what we have an issue with is just making sure the right information is being passed and given to our community in the way that they prefer it. In so many cases, Spanish language. That's what we do at Mundo Hispanico, is we, you know, make sure our community has everything that they need, whether it be for a vaccine, where to get it, the pros and cons to, you know, where to vote. But that's single-handedly the biggest issue. And it's been tough. I mean, our community is mistrustful of what is official because of past experience with what that official messaging is in these last few years.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about more about the pandemic a little later in the show, particularly revolving around Governor Kemp's upcoming announcement that he's lifting virtually all restrictions that had been put in place in the state. And we'll get to that in a short while. But Jim Galloway, let me start with the ongoing fallout over the governor's signature of the kind of sweeping election change bill. And let me recap for people. Most observers of the legislature and many of the legislators themselves had expected that these big omnibus bills, one in the House, one in the Senate, kind of combined together, that was one of those bills that was going to come down to day 40 and get signed or get approved at the last minute. People might now know some of the provisions that were in, what was out. In fact, they moved it very quickly last week, and Governor Kemp took the bill and with a little more than an hour signed it in a private session, which, Jim, for an observer like you, doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't, and that kind of haste signals that the governor wanted something. He wanted credit for it, but he wanted it off the table just as soon as possible. I mean, the two images we have of that signing. Of course, we have video of State Representative Park Cannon rapping on the large, large oak door and to be allowed in, and then getting herself arrested. And then we have the photo of the governor in a downstairs anteroom with six other white men signing the bill. To me, and Brian may disagree with me, I think this whole episode, the way it was handled, tells me that the governor's top priority right now is surviving a GOP primary. That this was all about creating an image for Donald Trump supporters in Georgia, and he's kind of letting himself letting November 2022 take care of itself.
Brian, what's your response to what Jim's saying?
Well, obviously, the primary is going to be front and center for Governor Kemp. That's to be expected, and you can't see any decision in a first term not through a political lens. I don't care what party you are or who you are. Now, this is particularly different because we have a scenario where the former president is obsessed with Governor Kemp. Last week, endorsed a challenger to the Secretary of State with whom Trump is also obsessed. So, you know, Kemp knows that the playing field is perilous, and I think that he has navigated the politics of it as wisely and strategically as is possible. Because, look, this guy was thrown into an impossible situation back in November and December, and he just kept his head up, kept moving forward. And I think over time, the outrage from the left and the media on this bill will go down because a lot of what is being said about it, I would say all of the attacks on it, are lies. You know, the New York Times lead last week was, this is going to restrict access to voting. No, it's not. I promise you, mark this down. Somebody, everybody who's listening to this, mark this down. Turnout in 2022 will not be down. It will not be down because of this law, because it does not restrict access.
Dina, weigh in on that.
So I say turnout in 2022 will not be down, not because the bill doesn't restrict access, because it does, but because the people who voted will continue to be resilient and regardless of the rules will continue to vote. I think it's hard to ignore the fact that this bill criminalizes humanity. If you give a bottle of water to someone who is in line who may be thirsty, then that is a crime. And I think, you know, a lot of times, you know, a lot of these legislators talk about religion and Christianity, but I mean, in Matthew, it says, when I was hungry, you fed me. When I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. And the fact that there is a provision in a bill that says you cannot give people water, I think it speaks to the real intent and motivation behind the bill. While, yes, you know, there's still drop box locations that can be used, they're limited. It provides restrictions. I remember waking up on Friday morning after the governor signed the bill on Thursday, and I heard a reporter say, this is a bill that is, it's a solution in search of a problem. And it was, you know, a problem that were not founded. There was not only a machine recount, there was a hand recount. And so when you talk about, you know, what is this bill really trying to address? If we want more people to vote, and historically, I mean, breaking all records, more people voted, then it would reason says that what was in place works, and let's keep doing what works, not try to restrict it and limit it and you know, reduce access. And who are we really targeting? If it is not people of color who turned out in record number, black people who turned out in record number, right? Like, who are we really targeting? And let's have real conversations about that. But, you know, it has been called the Jim Crow 2.0. And I think, you know, when, again, there was no problem, it's a solution in search of a problem. I think that's why those allegations or accusations are being made. And again, when you criminalize humanity, I think, you know, it stands the reason that people don't have very little faith about the real intent of this bill.
Renee, why don't you jump in on this too?
This is exciting in so many ways. I mean, it's going to be fascinating to see how it all rolls out. But I mean, we have to remember that there was no fraud. Fraud has been rejected by top state election officials. It's been dismissed at courts at every level throughout the state. What I do think, though, that this has done, the images, I mean, and they're stark, they're dramatic. I mean, you see that video of Representative Cannon being, you know, held, and it just makes you think of all of the civil rights issues that have been at play for decades and decades, most recently in the last couple years with George Floyd, et cetera, et cetera. And you see Kemp signing in what looks like a bunker, like a war bunker, right, under the darkness of night. And it just makes you think that there is something wrong here. I think that this will galvanize a whole coalition that will not be good for Republicans. I mean, we had spent Mundo Hispanico, for example, we had track all things Hispanic, how it relates to the state. You know, Biden's 36,000 vote margin among Latinos was more than double his overall winning margin in the state. The Asian community, that community really coalesced to vote with Hispanics, with African Americans, to flip the state blue. And I do think that there is a younger generation out there that just sees this as being the political machinations that need to be changed, overturned, et cetera. And so it's go ahead, Bill.
No, finish.
So I think that what happened, the signing, how it's going to affect. I agree with Brian that, you know, it might be great for the governor in the primary, but overall, it's going to be a negative.
All right, Jim, I want to kind of go back and pick up on Brian's assertion that the New York Times is only one of many news organizations that reported that this new series of laws is going to suppress, what is an effort to suppress minority votes, calling it that reporting lies. Jim, on one hand, it is certainly true, and Brian would, you know, give him a chance in a sec, point to this, I think. It is certainly true that Republicans dropped their effort to end Sunday early voting, souls to the polls. It is also certainly true that they decided to drop the measure which would have ended no excuse absentee balloting. I mean, those are things that Republicans will be able to look at and point to and say, no, we're actually helping people, continuing to help people vote more easily. At the same time, Jim, you now have an 11-day deadline to be able to send a request for an absentee ballot. That's a long time before Election Day. Drop boxes are being eliminated in some communities. They have to be inside an early voting location. They have to have some kind of security personnel watching them. And the big one, the state now takes unto itself the power to step in and take over an election if they believe that a local election office is underperforming. And those are the kinds of measures that people are pointing to and saying these are examples of trying to suppress the minority vote.
Yeah, look, the South is a sophisticated place. You will not see voter suppression written in neon in a statute. There are ways to accomplish that without using the trigger words. And as far as, look, I agree with Brian. I think, you know, I think turnout in November 2022 is going to be out the window. And because just basically because our voting pool has been growing for quite some time. That doesn't mean that there's not point shaving in Senate Bill 202. You had mentioned the state power to take over poor performing election operations in counties. I would also point to the portion of the bill that says that bars counties from taking grants from private organizations that allowed them to reduce their lines and so become very well performing counties. So you're going to have some extra lines. And I would also point you to the minutia in here. That's actually quite important, I think. I think the people are overlooking this. Number one, there's a provision in there that would allow any voter in Georgia to challenge the voting worthiness of any of his fellows, his or her fellows, an unlimited number. We saw this in Columbus, where you had hundreds of people challenged by a Republican voting group. If you recall back in 2015, over in Hancock County, for the 2015 municipal elections in Sparta, the little town of Sparta, 174 voters were challenged. Their worthiness to vote was challenged. Most of them were black. It happens. The other part is there is also a portion of the bill that would allow state lawmakers. This bill puts quite a bit of influence. It really increases the influence of the legislature in elections. It allows individual two or three lawmakers in the House, in the Senate, to bring up a county election supervisor up before the state election board on charges of malfeasance, misfeasance. And you can see that could happen, that could be quite a powerful tool if you're involved in the counting of votes.
Brian, I want to give you a quick chance to respond to all that, but then I think we probably on this show are going to agree that we disagree necessarily on whether this bill does in fact suppress votes. But Brian, go ahead and take a shot at it, because then I want to move on to a couple of other issues that relate very specifically to this.
Yeah, it's impossible to respond to all of those accusations, most of which I disagree with, in a short period of time. It would take the entire show. Let me say, what you're going to see here, in reality, in practicality, is this will expand access. People, there's so much focus on souls to the polls, but we have more weekend voting now. We've expanded early voting in this state. And let me tell you what, you know who doesn't have early voting at all? Joe Biden, home state of Delaware. Where's the outrage? Why is he not talking about Jim Crow, or as he said, Jim Eagle, in his news conference? Why is he talking about that about his home state? Why is he not talking about the Democratic states that have photo ID requirements for absentee ballots? You know, we had photo ID for 2020 for absentees. If you went through the state portal to get your ballot, you got cross-referenced with the DDS, the driver's license database. So we've already done it. It works. The idea that only white people have IDs is ludicrous. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And let me tell you, when we put in photo ID for in-person voting, same thing. Voter suppression. Where was it? I mean, voter turnout has ballooned over the last 10 years. No one has registered more minority voters in Georgia than the Republicans who have held office over the last 10 years in this state. They have done automatic registration. It was Republicans who put into drop boxes in response to the pandemic last year. We are putting drop boxes into law for the first time in this bill. They were not in law, and they would have gone away if they had not been put in there. So at the end of the day, we are diminishing what Jim Crow was by making that comparison. Jim Crow was a assault on human rights throughout 100 years of our history. And to compare this benign voter security law to that diminishes the history of this state. And that's it.
Renee and Dina, I do think it's worth pointing out that Brian's right. It was certainly Republicans who expanded automatic voting registration. Brian Kemp was one of the people who did that as Secretary of State. We should also mention that Republicans in the Capitol this session looked to try to eliminate automatic registration, pulled back from it when it seemed they realized that it was probably going to cause them more trouble than it was worth. So, I mean, there were efforts to do things that could have been even more troublesome, but Republicans saw there was a price to pay, it appeared, Renee.
I think that timing is everything, and the timing of this bill, the way it was signed, smacks of desperation from a party that sees itself backed up against a corner and looks at the demographics of the change in the state as being almost insurmountable. So change the rules.
Dina, we're going to have to get to a break, but I want to take up another a quick issue with you. Two issues, really, and one we'll do before the break. It now appears, Dina, that while Republicans are doing as much as they can to, as Brian is doing on the show, to dispel the notion that this is all about voter suppression, there are organizations out there that are concerned about this. The Boston Globe reports that the head of the Major League Baseball Players Union is going to be discussing whether the All-Star Game should be moved from Atlanta in the aftermath of Governor Kemp signing the bill. The Los Angeles Dodgers manager, Dave Roberts, who is a black manager, one of two in the league, said he would consider declining to manage the game if it is held in Atlanta. National Black Justice Coalition is urging the PGA to pull the Masters from the Augusta National Golf Club. That's probably not going to happen. And a Washington Post columnist has joined those who have called on Atlanta to lose a shot at hosting the Final Four and becoming one of the 16 venues for the 2026 World Cup. We also have at least one Los Angeles movie and TV director who has said, James Mangold, who does some of the Marvel stuff, who has said, I'm not going to make any more movies in Georgia. So Republicans are going to have a hard time convincing people like that this bill is in fact perfectly fine.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to what Renee said, timing, but also intent. I mean, when you look at what has happened, again, this is a solution in search of a problem. Absolutely no fraud. All of the allegations dispelled, not proven. You had the insurrection on the federal government, on the Capitol. I mean, there's just a number of things that have come about visually that show that this country, our democracy is at stake. And that there is a real clear divide in this country, and that the question becomes, what is the motivation? If there was no voter fraud or any widespread voter fraud in the state of Georgia, why are we making changes? And yes, you know, it's great that we have automatic registration, but that is exactly why we don't need to require a photo ID, a copy of a photo ID for an absentee ballot. The state already has it. The state already did it in this election, was able to pull up the information through their systems. And so why add additional requirements when it's already working? Again, it's timing and intent, and what is the real motive, and what perception is reality, right? And so I think that those are the challenges, and that is what corporations and businesses are responding to.
Okay, I got to get to our first break of the show. We'll be back with more, a little more on this issue that we've already been discussing, and then we've got more to move on to today on Political Rewind. East Point Mayor Dina Holliday Ingram, GOP political consultant and president of Robinson Republic, Brian Robinson, Renee Alegria, president and CEO of Mundo Hispanico Digital, and Jim Galloway. The only place you can now get your fill of Jim Galloway's political analyst is here now on Political Rewind, and we're very, very glad about that. Jim, I'm really eager to hear, and I want to, especially Brian Robinson, but also Dina and Mayor Ingram and Renee on this. The Park Cannon arrest, the optics, which I mentioned at the top of the show, which people have talked about, obviously, an African-American legislator, hauled away in handcuffs, charged, I think, with two felonies. I've seen no stories that suggest that the charges have been dropped. But here's what I want to ask about. It seemed, Jim, that Governor Kemp had an opportunity in the hours after that arrest, which happened around 6:30 in the evening after he'd signed the bill, to get ahead of the news cycle, what was clearly going to be a negative story about Park Cannon's arrest. And he remained silent about it. You might have expected something like, we weren't aware that she was causing a disruption. We weren't aware she was being arrested. I mean, there could have been something to ameliorate the situation. And instead, he remained silent. And I reached out last night to Cody Hall, his communications director, and said, is the governor going to say anything? And his response was, we referred the comment to the Department of Public Safety because they made the arrest. The agency put out a statement detailing why they took the action they did. That doesn't have anything to say about whether the governor thinks that was the right action, and by being quiet, what that means.
No, I mean, clearly they're attempting to disassociate themselves from it, but you can't tell me that the governor doesn't oversee the State Department of Public Safety, and if he were to pick up the phone, or his chief of staff were to pick up the phone and say, let's lose these charges, that would happen. I mean, I'm still looking through the Georgia code for that section on felonious door knocking. State lawmakers have immunity from arrest during the session, and the only thing I think one of the few things that she might be charged with is breach of the public peace, by rapping on a door. But I will go back. I will go back to the fact that all of this is being done through the prism of a Republican primary, and arresting Park Cannon is not offensive to most Republican voters under those circumstances. I would venture to say I think they would say she tried to break into a governor's news conference / speech, and she deserved what she got.
Brian, thinking about your former boss, Governor Nathan Deal, and the way he tended, especially as he moved on into his tenure, to try to be a more moderating force, I find it hard to imagine he wouldn't have said something about Park Cannon and found some way to say that he wishes it hadn't happened.
We don't have to guess. You know, the same thing happened to us. And I forget.
Yes, Nakima Williams.
That was after me. When I was there, I was there 2011 through 2015. And, at some junctures, then State Senator Vincent Fort, who actually has gone on to be a friend of mine, somebody I've gotten to know through your show, Bill, actually, he did a sit-in in the governor's office front. The business hours ended. The Capitol was closing. The troopers asked him to leave. They gave him a grace period, asked him to leave again. He didn't, and was carted out in handcuffs. But that was what Vincent was trying to do. He wanted the visual of him in handcuffs leaving the Capitol. He wasn't hurt. He wasn't charged with anything. He wasn't booked at the jail. He was just taken out of the Capitol. And to Jim's point about felonious door knocking, Representative Cannon is not going to be charged with a felony. She's not going to be charged with anything. She was just being removed, and she got exactly what she wanted. Yeah, this isn't hurting her rights. This is fulfilling her desires. She wanted media coverage. She wanted a photo. She wanted the optic, and she got it. She got exactly what she wanted, and she is none the worse for it. I mean, she's not going to be hurt. And Jim says it's about the prism of a Republican primary. This is about the prism of a Democratic and media narrative that Georgia is doing something oppressive, and it's not. And it's forwarding that narrative that we are doing something outrageous when all the facts that I gave in the first half of the show point out why it's not and why these corporations saying they're not coming here, they don't know what they're talking about. They haven't read the bill. They've read the New York Times. They don't know.
Mayor Ingram?
Yes, so my understanding is that Representative Park Cannon wanted to be included in a room with six white men plus the governor, a white man, signing what is being considered a voting suppression bill with a photo, and I haven't checked the veracity of this, but allegedly the photo on the wall was of a well-known slave plantation in the room, and it's centered. I don't know if it's true. I'm just saying that's what's out there. And so if that is the case, those optics are bad. What she wanted was to be able to be in the room. And as Black women, oftentimes we have to, you know, push to make that happen. Why did she, as a representative, not have the right to be in the room with the other folks that were in the room? It clearly wasn't a closed meeting because there were people who were in the room. So to say she got exactly what she wanted, what she got, she did get two felony charges. So I'm not sure, you know, what news you're reading or what information you have, but to my knowledge, she's been charged with a felony of obstructing law enforcement as well as disrupting the General Assembly session. And so those are two felonies that she's charged with that have not been dropped. And as was indicated, she's immune from arrest while being in the General Assembly. So, you know, I find it interesting to be able to say she got what she wanted. She's a Black female in America who wanted to be at the table. And as a state representative, and I'm sure the others in there were elected officials, either representatives or senators, she tried to get into the room. But that was met with arrest. Unlike the insurrectionists at the Capitol, at the federal Capitol, U.S. Capitol, who were screaming and all up in white male law enforcement officers' faces, and they got treated with respect and courtesy, right? Like, we're still trying to find people who were there because they weren't arrested on site. But she's knocking on the door. And there's a photo contrast out there of her knocking on the door and them standing in the face, and she's getting carted off in handcuffs. And so when you talk about this nation's past and this history, and it continues to manifest itself in this way, again, what is the timing, the intent, and the motivation? And you're going to be swimming upstream when those images continue to pop up.
So I want to get you in here, Renee. I do want to point out that fact-checking on the painting, which is in the background of the picture, the photograph of Kemp signing this bill, indicates that mansion, that plantation, was actually built in the post-slavery in 1869. So there has been some misinformation out there about it. I understand there is perhaps reconstructed or moved there a slave cabin on that site. So that's just my understanding. I understand Mayor Ingram's passion about this. I'm wondering, though, if saying that law enforcement at the Capitol didn't arrest white demonstrators who massed by hundreds, if not thousands, to begin arresting them at that moment of the insurrection might have created much more danger for the law enforcement officers themselves. So I'd have to suggest that maybe we should think about whether they're really comparable situations. But Renee, make your point.
No, that is a good point. But still, in our perception, what we just witnessed on January 6th, what we saw in the storming of the nation's capital, you know, here we have Representative Cannon being forcibly removed. As we've discussed, it's bad optics. And I do think that the argument of she got what she deserved, she got what she wanted, this does not ring so well with many Georgians, particularly women of color, particularly people of color. It doesn't work, and it's not going to when it's time to go to the polls.
All right, let's do this. Let's take our final break of the show, and when we come back, let's take up another issue that's in the news right now. Governor Kemp is about to end restrictions that he had put in place through his emergency orders on coronavirus because of the coronavirus. Let's talk about the implications of that and more after these messages. Jim Galloway, Renee Alegria, Mayor Dina Holliday Ingram, and Brian Robinson, who is on fire today, are all on the show with us today. Brian Robinson, and listen, I know how many of you out there like to give Brian Robinson a hard time on Facebook, on Twitter, or whatever. And that's fine. He understands that. He's a big boy. But here's my point. This show has always been about trying to give voice to people who you may not necessarily agree with. It is the other side of the conversation. And I am very glad, even when he's at his passionate best, that we have people who we may disagree with, who we may fact check, but they're here to help have a more balanced conversation. So that's my little speech about that right now.
Thank you, Bill.
Brian?
And Bill, can I add very quickly there that if Republicans or anybody, any party in the Georgia General Assembly did anything to take away the rights of legal voters, and if it was particularly a disparate impact on minority voters, I would be speaking out against it. I believe in the rights of every Georgian voter.
Yeah, I think you probably would, but you may be misinterpreting what some of these measures in the law now that we have in books really do try to do. But I want to stop that part of the conversation. Jim, the governor's going to lift all restrictions. We're going to have big gatherings again. I think, you know, maybe concerts, maybe nightclubs reopening. And, you know, the governor has been criticized over and over for putting business interests ahead of public health, public safety, and he's going to end up getting criticized for this as well. But his argument in response would be, Georgia's done no worse or no better than most other states with different kinds of restrictions. That's not quite true. We've had a somewhat higher death count and we've had more coronavirus cases. But I think he would also point to Florida and say they didn't have any restrictions and they've done all right. I mean, what I'm saying is we can be critical of him, but it's so hard to calculate how this is all coming down.
And look, part of this is just kind of the pattern of pandemics. It's not, there is no immediate gratification in solving a pandemic. I mean, you go into lockdown and you don't know whether it's worked or not for 2 weeks. You raise the lockdown and you don't know whether that has hurt or harmed your cause for another 2 or 3 weeks. And there's all these intervening conditions that are also in play. I mean, Georgia is in many ways in the same boat as several other states, but it does have a very low vaccination rate overall. We have had a problem that's a logistical problem of getting the vaccine to underserved populations. We're getting at that. Say what you will about Brian Kemp, he is operating under the same philosophy that he expressed during the 2018 election, and that is when it comes to striking the balance between healthcare and economic development, he gives priority to economic development. His theory is, if you don't have economic development, you don't have health care. And so and he has followed through with that. The AJC had Alan Judd over the AJC had a terrific piece on that looked through 15,000 emails between the governor's office and the Department of Public Health, and found that Kathleen Toomey and Brian Kemp did disagree vociferously on the pace at which Georgia was opening back in May and June, and to the point that Toomey began speaking to Kemp through her lawyer, through the staff lawyer. It's hard, but I'm just hoping that the pace of vaccine here in Georgia will step up and kind of get us past these arguments over opening and closing.
Renee, the piece that Jim refers to by Alan Judd was based on a request for emails and communications between the governor's staff and public health officials. And Judd does show that in many cases, the governor chose business over what the advice might have been from his public health experts, Kathleen Toomey, specifically. So, you know, right now the AJC, it never has been, but it's especially today not his favorite newspaper. But it is, you know, we're watching that balance between business and public health and seeing different states with governors who take one side or the other of that.
Yeah, listen, I read that piece and it was incredibly informative. I mean, and it showed that Temp repeatedly disregarded advice from Toomey back then, and we're seeing it play out again now, which, you know, we're at this unenviable position for him to make the right call, and it's tough. It's a difficult time for us all, right? But when you take a look at recent history, and you take a look at, for example, Dr. Birx's interview with Sanjay Gupta on CNN. And, you know, you come away thinking, wait, every life after we lost 100,000, that number, which totaled about 400,000 beyond that, could have been drastically reduced had we moved faster with measures. That just happened, what, on Friday, that interview? It plays in your mind with, okay, here we are. We're not out of the woods. We're all being vaccinated. Or, you know, we're trying to get that vaccine. Why open up everything now when stats are rising? Look, the Hispanic community has been hit so hard by COVID. The entrepreneurs that are the pillar of the Hispanic community have been hit so hard. We want to get back to business and life as normal, but at what cost? And, you know, you take a look at 1,000 deaths still every day in this country. That's a 9/11 every 3 days. We're not there yet, you know. So it's a little premature in my opinion, and we'll see how the rest of the spring plays out.
Brian, it seems to me the issue with sort of doing what I did, which is to say, well, we got to have a balance between business interests and public health, which is what the governor's trying to achieve here. The problem with saying that in a somewhat cavalier way is that it ignores the fact that we're heading toward 19,000 Georgians who have died from COVID-19 or related illnesses. And that's a riveting number, Brian.
Sure. And, you know, the problem with the idea that by opening the economy, we are cavalier about deaths, it's false. And it's a false trade-off, because letting the economy implode, which Governor Kemp did not do, saved lives too. And getting our economy going has been good for Georgia families. Our unemployment rate is lower than most of the country. Governor Kemp deserves a lot of credit for that. You know, when he opened, you know, tattoo parlors and bowling alleys and all that, and gyms back in the spring of last year, the national media headlines were about, go ahead and start building the mass graves in Georgia. You know, it was completely sensationalized. And guess what? Georgia's outcomes are not substantively different than the restrictive states that today have higher unemployment rates. So I, at this juncture, am willing to put my eggs in Brian Kemp's basket, because he's made choices and he's been proven right.
Dina, I want to give you a chance to respond to this. We're running out of time, but I definitely want you to weigh in.
Yeah, so I would just say, in order for you there to be any focus on business or sustaining business, you have to have people who work in them and people to buy their goods or services. And so you have to prioritize people. And make sure that we're doing all that we can for that. I mean, I believe that Georgians and definitely East Pointers will continue to follow the safety guidelines, because they've had to become have had to become the governors, mayors, you know, persons of their own homes, and understand what is really at stake and have lost loved ones. And so you know, the reality of it is, I agree. I think it might be too premature. But, you know, when we were the second city in the state to put a mask mandate in place on July 6th, and it wasn't challenged by the governor, that was because we felt it was necessary and the people were already sheltering in place and will continue to do so.
Mayor Dena Holliday Ingram, East Point, thank you. You get the final word on today's edition of Political Rewind, and thank you so much for being with us. Renee Alegria, Mundo Hispanico, we're very happy to have you here. Jim Galloway, you as well. Brian Robinson, you're all geared up for the 2022 election cycle. You've got your talking point down. Thank you for being here, Brian. We're out of time for today's show. We're back with you tomorrow, of course, with another edition of Political Rewind. In the meantime, take care, stay healthy, wear your mask, and go get your vaccine. See y'all tomorrow.